Everybody loves the touchdown.
Throws to the back of the end zone, and it is caught for a touchdown by Holmes.
The grand slam.
Fly ball to center field. Ethier has done it again. It's a grand slam.
The buzzer beater.
Gets it to LeBron for three for the win.
Yes! LeBron James!
But how did those players get to that moment? And who built the venue and signed the contracts? We dig into the business side of sports and give you the answers. This is Sports Business Radio, powered by Postano. Now, from our studios in Portland, Oregon, with Sports Business Radio, here's your host, Brian Berger.
Well, thanks for checking out the only show in the country dedicated to covering the business side of sports. We're excited to be powered by Postano. Follow them online at postano.com or on Twitter at Postano. That's P-O-S-T-A-N-O. Speaking of Postano, we are taking the Sports Business Radio Roadshow presented by Postano to UCLA on December 4th for a conversation with former UCLA and NBA star Baron Davis. Davis, a very successful business person now with film, TV, and online ventures, will make for an interesting conversation. We'll do the conversation in front of UCLA sports business students at the Center for MEMS, M-E-M-E-S. And we will record the conversation, and you'll hear that on a future edition of Sports Business Radio. If you're a university and you're interested in having us bring the Sports Business Radio Roadshow presented by Postano to your campus for a conversation with a marquee name from the business of sports in front of your students, email me at brian@sportsbusinessradio.com. Your students can ask questions. We record the conversation to air on a future edition of Sports Business Radio. It's basically us bringing our radio conversations to your university, but your students get to participate. It's a great thing. We're looking to do it several times in 2015. So again, brian@sportsbusinessradio.com if you're interested in hosting us, as UCLA is doing with our conversation with Baron Davis on December 4th. Big show coming up today. Yogi Roth with the Pac-12 Networks. He's producing a documentary called Life in a Walk. It's about his journey with his dad after his dad was diagnosed with cancer. What questions would you ask your family or friends if you went on a walk with them? Terrific conversation with Yogi. He's producing a documentary. They're raising money for the documentary. They're almost all the way there, but they need some help getting over the hump. And we're going to talk about that with Yogi Roth from the Pac-12 Networks on the show today. Justin Garrity, our friend from Postano, the president of Postano. Postano does excellent work with bringing social media conversations to life for teams like the Boston Red Sox, the Dallas Cowboys, the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the LA Kings. They have a new partnership with Fish Technologies that may change the way you consume social media at events. We're going to discuss this new partnership with Justin on the show today. Amanda Bradford, you're going to find this one interesting. She's the founder of a new dating app called The League. I know we're a sports business show, but the reason this comes into play is Amanda is a former Stanford MBA student, and she just may change the dating game for C-level senior executives. The League has been labeled Tinder for the elite by some. We have a lot of senior executives who listen to this show, so I thought this might make for an interesting conversation. You can learn more about the new app at theleagueapp.co, theleagueapp.co. But tune in for the conversation with Amanda Bradford. I think it's a pretty good idea. We'll talk to her on the show today. And then finally, Matt Watson, the founder and CEO of Watson Creative. They recently designed and built an incredible new website for my Sports PR Summit event, sportsprsummit.com. Watson Creative has done work for the Denver Broncos and the San Francisco 49ers. They've done work for athletes like former NFL star Amon Green. Matt's a former Nike executive, and he really understands the sports space. So we'll talk to Matt Watson on our show today. Couple of reminders. You can download the SBR podcast on demand. Just go to sportsbusinessradio.com or go to iTunes. We're also on Stitcher. We're on TuneIn Radio. You can find us in a number of places. Just type in Sports Business Radio and our show will come up. You can follow me on Twitter at SB Radio, or you can become our Facebook friend. Just go to facebook.com/sportsbusinessradio and you'll find regular updates about our events and everything we're doing there. All right, we've got a busy show. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay in the know at sportsbusinessradio.com. Podcasts, blogs, and more powered by Postano. SBR will be right back.
As long as I got my suit and tie, I'ma leave it all on the floor tonight. And you got fixed up too.
Hi, it's Brian Berger. Here at Sports Business Radio, we are proud to work with our partners, Pestano. They make a sports-proven visual marketing platform that I've personally been amazed to see. Teams like the Dallas Cowboys, Boston Red Sox, LA Kings, and Cleveland Cavaliers all use Pestano to engage their fans. When sports teams and fans tell their stories together, amazing things can happen. Every fan has a story. Whether you want to put selfies on the Jumbotron, create a dynamic social media command center, or activate a hashtag campaign on your website, Pestano can design an amazing social experience true to your brand. Even better, using the Pestano platform can pay for itself through selling sponsorships. As an example, the Kings sell sponsor space to Toyota and other clients and run the ads using Pestano. Want to see what your team's social content could look like? Schedule a demo today. Go to Pestano.com/sports. If you're a fan of this podcast, you understand the real power of engaging your fans. And these guys get it. That is Pestano.com.
This is Sports Business Radio.
My guest is Yogi Roth. He's with the Pac-12 Networks. He currently produces the Drive series. It's a great series. Also an author. He's co-authored a book with Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll called Win Forever. Yogi, thanks for joining us on Sports Business Radio. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. It's awesome to come on your show.
So obviously you've got lots of sports connections to this show, but one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on is you're producing a really unique documentary called Life in a Walk. I love the idea and the impact the idea is having on so many people. Tell us about Life in a Walk.
Oh, well, first and foremost, thanks for even asking, man. It's awesome to talk about this project. And it's been probably the funnest thing I've ever been involved in my entertainment career, at least. And fundamentally, my father was diagnosed with prostate cancer, as a lot of men and people have dealt with, whether directly or indirectly. And I didn't know how to deal with it. He went in for the surgery, and I still didn't deal with it. And I was probably like some of us as we're trying to get going in our careers, just racing, right? Not returning phone calls, not, you know, always staying up late, just working on the next thing, just trying to get ahead. And while I was doing that, I was missing out on some of the simple joys in life that we used to always have as kids, right? And my favorite analogy is when you're 10 years old and you come home from your day and your parents ask you how you're doing. Tell them who you sat next to, what you traded for at lunch, we did at recess. But as we get older, we're supposed to be more mature. But when they ask us about our day, it's two-word answers. It's one sentence. So we lose all this depth. And that was happening to me. And I didn't really know how to process the emotion of my dad going through that. And then, of course, just the general thought of getting older and running yourself in the ground and missing out on, you know, time with your loved ones. And it hit me between the eyes that I wasn't doing enough. So I flew back east and basically asked my dad to go for a walk. And he said, sure, where do you want to go? Probably thinking around the corner. And I gave him a plane ticket, and I said, meet me in Portugal. Let's go walk the Camino de Santiago. And for those of you that aren't aware of what that is, it's probably the most famous pilgrimage in the world. It's through France and Portugal and Spain. And it's just a beautiful trip and an amazing walk with the best scenery you could dream of. And we went for it. And I asked him every question I could dream of, from love to life to getting hired, getting fired, breaking your heart, losing loved ones. And I got to ask everything that was on my heart. And we filmed the entire thing. And when I came home, I didn't know if this would just be kind of a family movie, you know, something just a love letter to my family. And as I started to talk to my peers around, you know, some of your friends up in your neck of the woods, they said, wow, man, this is striking a chord with me. And I've never directed anything. I've been producing sports docs for the last 6 years, but I wanted to get out of my comfort zone. And I said, you know what, let's take a run at this thing. So I started to piece together this film. And it started coming together. We got to about 80% done. And the way that films usually work when they're independent is you take them out and you try to get them purchased by networks or financed by, you know, a bunch of individual financiers. And I said, you know what, let's take this story, this message about not screwing it up and going to spend time with the people you care about to the masses, and let's crowdfund this thing. So we partnered with Indiegogo. They were amped because they said it's like the old school version of crowdfunding. And for the last, you know, 35 plus days, we've been spreading this message around the world, and I got to tell you, man, it's been amazing to raise the money that we've raised, almost $40,000 right now. The best part for me is that I've heard from thousands of people around the globe that were influenced by 4.5-minute trailer because it forced them to stop and get grounded and go ask their parents to go for a walk or a cup of coffee or just ask them the question they've been dreaming about asking them or for those that have lost their parents, it forced them to stop and be better parents themselves. So for me, it's been what started as a kind of a home movie to hopefully becomes a movement around stopping and spending time with the people you care about.
What is your favorite moment through this journey with your dad?
Oh, that's a good question. To me, the things that I remember the most were watching him from afar and watching his influence on everyone he met. Because there's other pilgrims, there's a couple hundred thousand people that walk this thing every summer. And my dream for my dad had always never been for him. I wish he had more money, or I wish that he had a nicer car. I never cared about that. But I've always wished that he could influence more, because everyone who's come across him has been an influence. And to watch that happen was really cool, because every day and every night we were going through a different decade of his life. So we would go there. We would go deep. We would dive into it. And then I'd pull out and I'd just watch. I'd let it absorb into my soul and into my heart. And I would get so emotional just watching him, give a kid a hug or, share a baguette with somebody. Because then, of course, there's always a principle to it, and he'd come back and he'd teach it to me. So for me, there's so many unique memories, but I think watching his influence obviously start, on me since I was born, then watch it as it spread around this walk and this pilgrimage, spread to other parents and other kids was magical, man. It was such a beautiful experience for a child to be in awe of a parent. I think so much as parents, we watch our kids and we watch them at concerts or ballet recitals or games for me as an athlete, and they're proud of us. But as kids, we probably don't really look at them in that regard. Wow, I'm really proud that he's my dad. And I think for me, just that light bulb going on and developing that type of relationship with him was one that, it's the reason that I was the best few weeks of my life.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a firm believer that life is just a big collection of stories. Those are the things that are most memorable to us and stick with us the most. And, that's what you do for a living. You tell stories of athletes. But it sounds like your dad's a pretty good storyteller too, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of parents, they can just once you wind them up, they just kind of get going, And I think that's the truth. For me, I learned so many things about my dad. An easy example, when I was in high school, I started as a true freshman in varsity football. I thought I was probably sweet. I played. I was the guy. I was making a bunch of plays. Well, I didn't learn until this trip that my dad had also done the same thing. I'm 33 years old. I was 31, 32 at the time. And he never told me that. He probably should have told me that when I was a freshman, right? Hey, I did the same thing. But he never pumped himself up. He never did that. And I think fundamentally, parents are always asking us how our day is, what's going on with us, what's up with our lives, what's the next step we're about to take, the next phase. But very rarely do we stop and say, hey, what was it like for you to be in high school, or for you to be in your early 30s and have to deal with commitment, or to be in your 40s and lose a child, or be married for 40 plus years. I don't think we ask those questions enough, and I definitely didn't. And for me, what's so cool about this film is that I got no problem now opening up my heart and saying, I'm a screwed up. Because as an athlete, and I consider myself an athlete, a relative alpha male being in that culture my whole life, we're kind of taught that only on the football field is where emotion's okay. On the court, on a field in front of 90,000 people, or a high school game, we can get as amped and as emotional as we want. We can cry, we can laugh, we can get angry. But off the field, we're not supposed to deal with emotion, because we don't do that, right? We don't cry, we don't get emotional. And this trip and this experience really taught me to become available emotionally, to be able to deal with that. Now I'm a disaster, man. I'm crying at commercials. I'll cry during this podcast or this interview.
Yeah, it's amazing. I am the father of a almost 10-year-old daughter. And one of the most special things that she does for me is every night I read to her and I tuck her in bed, and she always asks me the same question. Daddy, tell me a story of when you were a little boy. And I think it's awesome that she's curious about me when I was a little boy, her age, her, grandparents, her aunties, all of that stuff. So she's learning as she gets older about our family and what it's all about. And I really appreciate that she cares. And I think she, really enjoys learning about our family history. You've heard from a lot of people during this documentary. What's something that stands out from you or for you from someone that you've heard from?
You know, I'm not going to lie. I get moved probably every day. I share every couple of them with my dad. I've heard from people that never had a father, that never got to know their father, that lost their father. I hear from people who weren't, you know, were working too much currently and aren't spending time with their kids. I hear them all the time. And it's been, if I'm being honest, this, you know, 40-day campaign has been really amazing for me. And it's been heavy. It's been really heavy because you're taking on these stories. And it's kind of like interviewing somebody, right? You're taking on my story right now on this call, on this
right.
interview. And that can be exhausting to a degree. And every time my mind goes to that place, I stop and I think about these people. And I apologize, but I get emotional talking about it because they're spilling their hearts out to me and they don't have their parents anymore. You know, they lost them. And every time I say, you know what, Yogi, it's exhausted to maybe hear more and more of these stories, I stop and I say, no way, man. Keep telling them. Keep coming. Because that's why I was put on the planet, to influence people. And I believe that in some way, through storytelling, through some way, that's what I'm supposed to do. And I love hearing them. And yeah, sometimes is it hard to hear about somebody who lost a parent? Yeah, it's the worst thing you can imagine. And then I remember that I didn't have to go through that. I was given the gift to go for a walk with a guy who's been my hero since I was born. And I was given the gift to ask him, like your daughter asks you, tell me a story about when you were my age, when you were younger, when you were a kid. And if I can be that to somebody else, where they get to share their stories about their good times with the person they lost, or their hopes and aspirations about spending time with their children, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna do that every time, and I'm gonna do that for as long as I need to. And that's why I think this film, which at first began, as I mentioned, as kind of a love letter to my dad and to my family, has grown to such, you know, to so much more than that. You know, it's grown into being a catalyst, a nudge to people to just stop and go ask their parents the question your daughter asks you every night. And that, to me, is probably, if you ask me, what's the second greatest moment of this piece, it's that. You know, of course, the first one is spending time with my dad, but the second is that. If I can, you know, this story can be a catalyst to anybody to pause for a second and ask them the question your daughter asks you every night when she gets tucked into bed, then we're creating something cool. And I can't wait.
Totally agree. It's very powerful. I'm joined by Yogi Roth. You can find him on Twitter at Yogi Roth. You can also follow Life in a Walk at Life in a Walk on Twitter. You can find them online at lifeinawalk.com. All right. You're raising money. As you mentioned, you've raised just about $40,000. I know your goal is $50,000. What's the money going towards and how can people contribute?
Thank you for asking. Well, basically, I've just been funding this film on my own, which has been a blast to do as we've continued to complete this story. But what crowdfunding allows us to do is make it really high end. You know, it allows us to color it and mix it and pay for great music, all the things that take a film from a good film to hopefully a great film. But it also allows us to spread it around the world. It allows us to take it to festivals. It allows us to really screen it in other cities across the globe, from Barcelona to Austin, Texas, to Portland, to Toronto, to South America, you name it. That's the goal. You know, the goal in this film is to get as many eyes on it and influence as many people. And everything that we built at lifeinawalk.com around our perks are basically for two people. So whether they're tickets to the Lakers versus the Trailblazers courtside, that's available. But you got to bring somebody. You know, we're trying to create that walk for people.
Right.
Or whether it's going to a football game, or whether it's you know, buying a journal and you've got to write down stories or questions for the people you care about. So we have a bunch of perks that are available, and we're close. You know, we got to finish strong. You know, we're at the you know the 20 right now. We're charging in the red zone, and it's time for us to finish. And I think it's really fun to reach out to the world, and I would love if people donated. And regardless of if they can or they can't, to me a donation isn't only just monetary. To me a donation is an email to a friend, to a dad. It's a Facebook post. It's a tweet. It's an Instagram. It's a hashtag with Life in a Walk of saying, check this thing out because it's going to influence you. And that's what I hope keeps happening.
No, it's great stuff. It's an amazing project. Very inspirational. You've got some great experiences, as you mentioned, on there, from screenings to Don't you have something with George Whitfield, the quarterback guru?
Yeah, for sure. You want to learn how to play QB, you can do that. If you want to get a mental training session with, I think, the world's leading high-performance psychologist, who's the high-performance psychologist for the Seahawks, among so many other Olympic athletes, a guy named Dr. Michael Gervais, you can get that. So there's still some really cool perks available, and we're going to be charging until Friday.
That's fantastic. We will get the word out. Again, you can go to lifeinawalk.com. You can follow them on Twitter at lifeinawalk. So I've got to ask, how's your dad feeling?
He's doing awesome, man. He's kicking butt. I mean, I think the only unique part about this kind of campaign is that people keep asking me that, right? Which I get, and I totally understand, but he's doing awesome. He really is. You know, when he got his prostate removed years ago when he first caught the prostate cancer. And he's such a role model for dealing with adversity, because he doesn't even let it enter his mind. You know, he's got such a strong mentality. He's got such mindfulness around his health. He hasn't flinched a day. He won't even say the word prostate cancer because he doesn't even want it to be part of his narrative. So he's doing great, man. And thanks for asking.
That's fantastic. And I just can't even imagine how close you guys are after this experience. Sounds like you were close before, but now after going through this journey, I'm sure that bond is very, very tight. Again, Yogi Roth, you can follow him on Twitter at Yogi Roth, Life in a Walk, lifeinawalk.com, or on Twitter at Life in a Walk. Yogi, thanks so much for joining us on Sports Business Radio. We'll spread the word and keep us posted on how this goes.
Yeah, thanks, brother. I really appreciate you reaching out, and thanks for the support.
All right, you're listening to Sports Business Radio. I'll be right back.
Stay in touch with SBR on Twitter. Twitter.com/SB Radio. Powered by Postano. So it's going to be forever, or it's going to go
down in flames. You can tell me when it's over. Hello, my name is Sophia Berger. I want to tell you about the Pixie Project. The Pixie Project matches pets to the right people. The Pixie Project takes pride in finding matches for both people and animals. The Pixie Project also offers low-cost veterinary assistance. My family worked with the Pixie Project to adopt our lovable puppy, Scotty. He's a great addition to our family. So if you get a dog or cat, kitten, or puppy, you should go to the Pixie Project. To learn more about the Pixie Project, visit them at www.pixieproject.org.
Bringing you up to speed on the latest breakthroughs in the world of sports. Let's enter the Technology Lab.
My guest is Justin Garrity. He is the president of Postano. You can find them online at postano.com or on Twitter at Postano. Justin, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Brian.
So for those of our audience who may not know exactly what Postano does, they work with teams like the Boston Red Sox, the LA Kings, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Dallas Cowboys, and they really help them bring their social media conversations to life. What else would you say about Postano, Justin, for those who aren't familiar with your company?
Yeah, sure. I would say that's all true you just said, and I think social media is a great channel for us to work with. We're really about taking the love and excitement that fans have and finding a way to work with teams to visualize that in stadium or on the website and really create an interactive experience between the teams and the fans. And, you know, imagine being in the stadium and tweeting something about, you know, this great goal that was just made and seeing that your tweet show up on the huge stadium screen above your head in the team's colors and the team's font. And so that all the other fans can see that. And that's an incredible moment, and that's what Postano does.
Well, we've had executives from Arizona State and from University of Oregon on this show to talk about how you've helped them with their efforts. And they talk about how their numbers with the social media traffic increases big time because of their efforts with Postano.
That's true. I mean, it's a really exciting phenomena where if you're in the stadium and you're seeing that huge screen and you realize as a fan that you can tweet something or share something on Instagram and it can make it to that screen, everyone that has a phone in that stadium becomes somebody that wants to get their message or their photo up on that screen. And all of a sudden you have this huge outpouring of social media tweets and Instagram posts trying to get up on that big screen, and that just means that you have a huge increase in social activity around your brand. around
well,
your team.
Yeah, we saw it firsthand at the Sports PR Summit last May when we were trending on Twitter with all the conversation. The MLB Fan Cave, where we hold our event, has such great displays there, and you guys were able to really bring our social media conversations to life. And then you had people like Rick Bucher and Jeremy Schapp and others who were retweeting the tweets and taking pictures, and it was really cool. For me, you know, that was kind of the first time that I saw the power of Pestano and just how you bring those conversations to life, and it was really impressive.
Thank you. Yeah, that's it's easy to forget being in the business that we are with how effective Pestano works in that way, but it is a common story now that that teams and brands that use Pestano almost every time see whatever it is that they're activating fans around to be trending that day or that moment. It is trending is now a common occurrence if you're using Pestano. It is pretty phenomenal.
Well, you guys recently made a deal to partner with Fish Technologies. Tell us about that partnership.
Yeah, it is such an exciting partnership. What Fish Technologies does is they are an experience operating system for events, meaning if you want to register and you want to interact with different elements at the event, whether it's booths or different areas to interact with a brand or with a team, they supply the operating system that allows, let's say, something like an RFID bracelet or a wearable or your mobile phone to connect to the environment wirelessly. So as you walk into the event or to the stadium, that's how you're essentially registered and how you come into that environment. And as you interact with the different areas, it allows you to easily share photos up onto social posts on Facebook and Twitter, or you can essentially submit your name into contests and potentially win a prize. But if you think of how a normal event happens where you have, let's say, an ID around your neck, or some kind of ticket that you're always showing somebody at the concierge or at the different booths, this bypasses all that by making this wireless. And so Fish Technologies allows for all of this to happen wirelessly, your interaction with an event. And our integration with them allows that wireless interaction to also help you get your social posts out and visualized up on the big screen. It is such an exciting partnership for us.
Well, that's great. Congratulations. And I know Fish has done a lot of work in the sports space as well, right?
They have. I would encourage everyone to go to the Fish website, which is fishisdata.com. That is their tagline. They are all about the data and helping brands get better by capturing that data and optimizing events. But fishisdata.com, if you look on that website, you'll see this incredible video about what they did with the Super Bowl street party last year in New York City. And it is a phenomenal event that they put on where they enabled all of the fans to interact with NFL and all the sponsors there in Times Square in a way that is incredible. And they've got a great video to show you how that worked. So I would encourage everyone to go see that.
That's great. So I know you've been very busy as of late. You're always on the road traveling and speaking at a number of different events. What's been keeping you busy lately?
Yeah, I always joke that I commute from Portland. Portland's my suburb. But what's been going on lately, Event Tech just happened in Las Vegas. And there we were able to talk to many brands about how to put up social signage at events and where to put them. So how they work and where to put them. And that was a great, great session where I talked to many leading brands and just had some great creative ideas around how they can activate fans through social signage and visualizing social activity up on these big, large displays. Before that, I was out in New York at IAB, and it was a great session on user-generated content and the idea around there of how to use that for brands to work as an endorsement engine to make sure that what fans are saying activates other fans and consumers around your brand. And that was a great session out there in New York.
No, that's good stuff. I've got to thank you for a few things. Number one, we're excited about the Sports Business Radio Roadshow presented by Pestano at UCLA on December 4th with former UCLA and NBA star Baron Davis. So that's going to be great, and you guys are going to be there with your displays and bringing conversations to life. We'll be doing that in front of the students and recording it to air on a future edition of Sports Business Radio. And then sportsprsummit.com just relaunched, and boy, you guys built an incredible Pestano on the site where we can aggregate all of our social conversations. So thank you again for that as well.
Yeah, you're welcome. We love both of those things. We love working with you and your team. And I would just encourage people to look at that social hub up on the Sports Radio website. And what's amazing about it is, rather than having to track down everyone's Twitter account, everyone's Instagram account, it all comes together right there in one social hub, and you can just really explore all the great social activity around your brand. It's good stuff.
Yeah, that's at sportsprsummit.com, a great example of what Pestano can do to capture all of the social media conversation around your event or your brand. Dustin Garrity, president of Pestano. Find them online at pestano.com or on Twitter at Pestano. Dustin, thanks so much for joining us on Sports Business Radio.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure, Brian.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay in the know at sportsbusinessradio.com. Podcasts, blogs, and more powered by Pestano. SBR will be right back.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble.
Hi, it's Brian Berger, host of Sports Business Radio. When I'm not on the radio, I team with nationally known sports writer and broadcaster Rick Bucher, former Nike PR senior executive Lee Weinstein, and veteran strategic communications executive John Lashway to form media and social media training firm Everything Is On The Record. The Everything Is On The Record team provides a unique blend of strategic PR and journalism expertise to our clients. We have worked in the trenches in corporate boardrooms with CEOs and company spokespeople. We've also worked in newsrooms alongside editors and reporters. Everything Is On The Record uses an innovative and unique approach to media training. Through the use of current media and social media examples tailored specifically for you, we prepare you for how best to relate to the digital media world that exists today. Whether you're meeting with a reporter, sitting at your home computer, or typing on your smartphone, you're on the record. We'll also put you through real-life scenarios where you'd be dealing with a reporter, so when you see the real thing, you'll be well-prepared and comfortable. With a goal of enhancing your image, protecting your reputation, and helping you connect with the people who are most important to your brand, we will show you how to develop the skills you need to be successful in a world where everyone has a camera, a recorder, and a desire to make news. For more information on our services and to learn more about our team of communications all-stars, go online to everythingisontherecord.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at everythingisontherecord.com. You can call us today at 503-701-2215.
The website is sportsbusinessradio.com.
My guest is Amanda Bradford. She is the founder of the dating app The League, which has been branded by some as Tinder for the elite. She's also a Stanford MBA student. Amanda, thanks for joining us on Sports Business Radio.
Hey, Brian. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We have a lot of C-level executives who listen to this show, people who work in sports. So when I saw this and the name The League, and you've got something called The Heavy Hitter, which is part of that, it's got some sports applications to it. Tell us how you came up with this idea.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So I guess rewind to November of 2013. I had just gotten out of a pretty long relationship. I had never been a dating app user before. This was my first foray into, I guess, being single and thinking about online dating. And a lot of my friends and colleagues and coworkers were all kind of exploring these dating apps, Tinder being one of the most popular at the time. And I was pretty intrigued by it. I kind of wanted to get on because I do think meeting people through a mobile device, a mobile platform is a much more efficient way than posting up at a bar and hoping that, you know, Mr. Right walks in and decides to buy you a drink. So I really like the efficiency of online dating. What I didn't like was sort of the lack of privacy and control. I didn't like the fact that most of these apps just kind of would put my profile up for anyone who wanted to see it, regardless of if they fit my preferences or were my business contacts or my coworkers. And there were certain things that I just didn't really feel comfortable. I really wanted that separation between work and personal life, and none of the apps out there did that. And so for me, I'm a big LinkedIn user. When I was in sales, that's typically how I did a lot of outbound outreach. I look at everyone's LinkedIn profile before I meet them for coffee, for drinks, just sort of how my world works. And so it seems silly to not leverage that social graph when it could be used for both protecting your privacy and keeping that kind of personal and work life separate, but also giving you more context about a person. For me, I know me and my friends, we tend to be attracted to more than just looks. Like, we want people that are ambitious, career-oriented, driven, kind of going out and trying to change the world. It just sounds a little bit cheesy, and that's hard to see from just a picture. So by kind of linking in with LinkedIn and mashing it up with Facebook, we felt like I could give people more context and also provide more privacy control.
So how will your app aggregate that information? Is there enough information on LinkedIn and Facebook that lets you know that, okay, here's a heavy hitter, so to speak, that you'd be linking your customers with?
Well, so to clarify, so the heavy hitter feature, and it is really geared for just people that have a need for privacy. And it's, I think some of the press kind of sensationalized it and said, you know, it's for CEOs only. But you'd be surprised that people signing up for the heavy hitter feature is everything from elementary school teachers that want to make sure they don't see their students' parents to, you know, to professors at universities that want to make sure they're not seeing their students versus lawyers who, you know, are meeting people every day. And so it's actually been pretty split against men and women and also around, like, industry. Like, I thought it might be something, you know, everyone would need to be kind of C-level or SVP level to need that kind of privacy. But a lot of people just really want to have control over who sees their profile, and they kind of want to be single to a smaller targeted audience and not just really be putting themselves out there for the whole world to see. And I think that's where that feature comes from. So that's sort of the heavy hitter piece. As far as what information we pull from LinkedIn, it's actually pretty interesting. We can pull in everything from what industry they're in, their past professions, what titles they've had, who they know on LinkedIn, also where they went to school, maybe if they did any type of other type of education institution. So we can really kind of pull all that information, see what groups they're part of, and really use that in both of a kind of a screening algorithm to make sure we're keeping the community curated and high quality, and then also as a matching algorithm to make sure that, hey, you know, maybe it looks like people in finance tend to match up well with people in media and entertainment or whatever it might be. And so getting that insight is super valuable and then allows us to constantly iterate on our matching algorithm so that we're kind of taking that into account as we go forward.
In doing some research for this interview, I saw a recent Pew study found that some 9% of U.S. adults say they've used dating sites or mobile dating apps, up from 3% in 2008. I guess the largest group of users is between 25 and 44. And there's a research firm called Ibis, and they say the dating services industry will hit $2.2 billion in revenue this year. That's a growing space. It seems like you may be onto something.
Well, it's funny because this space has historically not been the most lucrative from an investor perspective. You know, there's been a lot of scars. There's been a lot of deaths of companies that tried to launch. But I truly believe, I mean, one thing, the reason I went into this project, it started as a project, now it's becoming, you know, a company, was that I saw a huge consumer behavior shift. I mean, I saw friends and colleagues had never even dipped a toe in online dating, now all of a sudden really accepting and embracing mobile. I'm calling it mobile dating because I really think the mobile era is what changed a ton of the stigma and just the overall amount of people that are now kind of okay with using that. And so I do think of it as a growing industry, and especially if you look down at, if you even narrow that to our average age of users on the league are 29 right now. But if you look just at kind of the millennial demographic, which is basically, you know, mid-30s and under, all of them are now kind of open to using dating apps, and it's really become this sort of accepted way of, you know, this is how you date. This is what dating is now. Dating is no longer going to a bar and waiting for someone to buy you a drink. Dating is putting a profile together, going online, or not even online, on your mobile phone, and really meeting people and using the information we have now about everyone on these social networks to our advantage. So that's why our tagline is date intelligently, because I do think it is a better way to date. I think there's still a lot of strides you need to make in terms of, you know, matching more effectively and efficiently. But I think this is really the wave of the future. And I would say traditional dating is being completely disrupted, to use the favorite Silicon Valley cliche.
Amanda Bradford, the founder of the dating app The League, is my guest. So explain to our audience, if you want to use this app, do you go to iTunes and download it? And then what do you do from there?
Yeah, so kind of an interesting launch strategy. Right now, we are in private beta in San Francisco starting on Wednesday. And then we're going to be opening in other cities as we tip. So when I say tip, I mean we want to get critical mass in each of these cities before we open the gates so that the users all have a really good experience and that we can match people and there's not a dearth of supply. And so right now, San Francisco's hit that tipping point. I would say up next is likely New York, London, L.A., Boston, and Chicago are kind of in the running. But basically, anyone can download the app. You sign up, put in your zip code. You'll be on a wait list for your city. And then once we go live in that city, we'll be pulling people in off the wait list into the product. So I guess I'd love to get your users to sign up and get their cities tipped so that we can be live in more than just San Francisco.
And again, is there a website or is it just best to go to iTunes and download the app from iTunes?
Exactly. So you go to, you know, the App Store, iTunes App Store, type in League. The League date is the kind of optimized way of typing it in, and you'll be able to download it and register. And so you just need to log in with Facebook, put in your LinkedIn credentials, and it'll tell you kind of what our progress is for that city that you're in.
And if you're not on LinkedIn, then you can't use the app, right?
Right now we are requiring LinkedIn. That helps both from a screening perspective. One of the issues that has kind of tormented dating sites for decades now are just the issue of spam and fake users, people creating fake accounts. And so one thing that kind of mashup of Facebook and LinkedIn does is it really cuts down on these fake users. It's really hard. We have some algorithms in place to look at both types of accounts to make sure those aren't fake profiles and really ensure that everyone on the site is authentic and actually who they say they are.
So how do you market this? Other than doing interviews like this, how do you market this and get the word out about your unique app?
Yeah, so this space is really noisy. I've been really eschewing traditional marketing tactics. We haven't done any online advertising. We've really done very little just marketing in general. We had a couple of events and mixers in San Francisco to get people talking. But I'm really leaning on our user base. It's interesting. The value proposition, even amidst the somewhat sensationalized headlines, I think really resonates with career-oriented people. I think everyone wants to find someone that they click with or that they're compatible with. And a lot of people realize that, you know, we are spending 80% of our waking days at work. And so really making sure that we're tailoring an app to and allow people to both be career-oriented and also take their dating lives a little more seriously. So we've been really leaning on our user base. We have about 300 people who've emailed in to kind of volunteer to be ambassadors for their city. We're calling them scouts, just to stay with our sports analogy that I'm sure your audience appreciates. And so those people we're really leaning on to get their networks on, to tell their friends. It's almost like a door-to-door sales model in a way, and really enabling our users to kind of tell everyone the story and get their friends on. And so that's what we've been really kind of focusing on, that ambassador program, and less of a traditional online marketing approach.
So Tinder obviously has gotten probably more publicity and buzz than any other dating app. What do you think that they've done that's right? I know, you know, there were some stories written, again, keeping this in the sports realm, around the Olympics, and a lot of the Olympic athletes got on Tinder, and at the Olympic Village, they were meeting up with each other, and, you know, they found that it was kind of a cool thing for them to be able to utilize.
Right. I think Tinder's done an incredible job marketing and getting, I couldn't be doing what I'm doing if Tinder hadn't paved the way and really made kind of online dating acceptable and seen as something that's fun and new that people do no matter what stage of life they're in. And so I think Tinder's done a really great job. I think there's a couple things they're missing in their app that I know is kind of hurting their brand from is this quality dating? And I think Tinder has its use cases, and I think it's a fun app, and I don't really see it as a competitor. I see it as kind of a compliment in that you're looking for, you know, someone to meet up with when you're at the Olympics. Sure, let's use Tinder, but You know, if you're looking to go out for drinks on a Friday night in the city that you live in, you would kind of use the league. So that's sort of the way I see it positioning next to Tinder.
You're trying to go into big cities. You mentioned San Francisco, New York, London, L.A. What do you do about the traditional dating specialists who aren't using online means to align their clients with other clients? And people are spending $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 with dating specialists in those cities. How do you, I guess, get that clientele to use your app and use that as their main resource for finding dates?
Yeah, it's a really, really insightful question because a lot of people just say, oh, it's another dating app. And really, when I thought of the league and when I thought of kind of the target market I want to bring it to is I thought of it as taking share both from people that are sort of reluctantly on Tinder because that's where critical mass is. And then on the opposite side of the spectrum, the people that are paying $30,000 to these matchmakers to give them, you know, 5 to 8 dates over the course of 2 months. And that seemed very inefficient to me. I interviewed a bunch of matchmakers before kind of designing and prototyping the league because ideally the league serves both purposes. It serves, you know, the people that are fresh out of college that are looking for high quality dates on a Friday night and the people that, you know, maybe are divorced and running a company and have visibility and privacy concerns and want to be able to also meet and date amazing, compatible people. But I don't think they should have to go to kind of a matchmaker. To me, that seems like what headhunters did before LinkedIn came out. And now, you know, why we should be able to be kind of an online dating platform that can cater to both of those use cases and those privacy needs. Because that's really the difference between the two is there's just this ultimate need for privacy, which is why the people are spending $30,000 with these matchmakers.
So for our audience who may not be familiar with Tinder or online dating apps, explain how this works. Is it kind of the, you know, you've got your picture on there, you've got the profile that's pulled, like you said, from LinkedIn and Facebook, has some interests, I assume. What other information is on your profile on the league?
The goal is to make it really frictionless. Again, so Tinder, one of the reasons I think they're really successful in addition to their marketing antics was the fact that they made the whole onboarding process very easy. People didn't have to sign up and fill out 100 different forms. You just logged in with Facebook and you were basically on this platform. And so what we're doing is trying to keep it pretty frictionless as well. We do ask for a couple more pieces of information around height, around ethnicity, around religion. Those are optional, but we want to pull in that information to allow people to be able to kind of sort and filter on things that are important to them. Because I think if you look at some of the stats, basically the more educated a user is, the more their preference is to have another, you know, be matched with a user who's also educated. And especially from female to male, but also from male to female, that point spikes pretty drastically. If you look at men with graduate degrees or men who went to, you know, really top tier universities, their preference for educated women, you know, is like 3x that of kind of a standard male on our site. So it's interesting just to see how to allow people to put in those preferences and use them. And so we're basically allowing, that's kind of one of our differentiators. People can put in their preferences. We'll serve them up anywhere between like 5 and 8. We're calling them prospects to stay and see him here, but you know, prospects a day. You'll see their pictures, you'll see their interest from Facebook, you'll see some of their information that we pull from LinkedIn. And then once you match with them, both people express interest, you can then chat with them on the app, or what we really encourage is just users to get offline, right? So we're starting to put in different ideas of places they could go, offering up last minute restaurant reservations so that we're really encouraging the users to not just kind of look at this as a game, but actually try to meet these people in person. One other key piece that we show is your mutual friends that we pull from Facebook and LinkedIn. And so that adds a lot more context to the person. You sort of, you know, as a female, I personally feel a lot safer meeting up with someone for drinks when I know that we have 5 mutual friends and I can kind of get, you know, good, I could get background on that person if I wanted to.
No, that's good stuff. So wrapping this up, you went to Stanford as an MBA student. When you went to Stanford, what did you think you were going to be doing when you got out? Probably not this.
Oh my gosh, no. And it's funny, I could write a whole blog post about how starting a dating app has hurt my own dating life. that's another topic for another day, I guess. But I think I worked at big companies. I did an internship with a venture capital firm to see if I wanted to be on the investing side of the table. I've always wanted to start something and to own something and to run my own business. I wasn't quite sure in what space. And I don't know, I think I saw the tailwinds. I saw the growth of the industry. I saw the need in my community. And I felt like I had the technical background. I had the network. I had the kind of understanding of the young professional, both female and male, just having gone to school and working at different companies with them. I felt like I was the right person to bring this to market. And so I was thinking about like who else could launch this type of product. And I really do. I think you need to be someone who can really understand kind of the new era of mobile apps, but also understand kind of how the world is changing and how to also incorporate these career focused folks and bring them into the world of mobile dating apps, where I think typically they weren't really, most people haven't dipped their toe into this space before.
Well, I think it's a phenomenal idea. I think it's something that's been needed. This kind of targeted approach in the dating app space. How can people find you on Twitter, or if someone wanted to reach out to you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, so all of our handles are The League App, T H E L E A G U E A P P. We are all on all the social media channels, and I mean, you guys can just honestly drop me a note at amanda@theleagueapp.co. CO is the new com for the millennial generation. So
nice.
I'm happy. I'm pretty responsive to emails. I think we've really worked hard to iterate on user feedback, and literally within days of getting feature requests and ideas that we think are really good, we'll push them into the next version of the app. So I'd love to hear any feedback ideas that your user base has as well.
Okay. And again, the best way to download the app is to go to iTunes, look for The League, and download it. And then, as you said, you're going to start in San Francisco, but you're going to kind of do an unveil in other cities coming up over the next year or so. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're really letting our user base drive it. So, you know, if they can get their friends and their network to join our waiting list, we can justify opening it there. So we just need to get to critical mass, which is typically a couple thousand people in a city, depending on the city size. And so I'm going to be kind of flying out and trying to do a couple of different marketing events in the cities where the waitlist numbers are the highest. But we need more scouts in each city that kind of believe in the vision and believe that there needs to be kind of a classier, just overall higher quality dating platform out there. And I'd love to work with anyone who's interested in helping bring us to their city sooner.
Well, Amanda, I am an adjunct professor. I teach sports business, and one of the things I talk to my students about is you shouldn't just assume that when you graduate from school that you're going to go work for someone else. If you have a good idea, if you want to be an entrepreneur, you should pursue that idea. You've done that, and I commend you for doing that, and I appreciate you joining me on Sports Business Radio.
Well, great. Well, thanks so much for inviting me.
Thanks, Amanda. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back.
This is Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger, powered by Postano.
Sports Business Radio talks to the people who call the shots in the world of sports.
Brian Berger goes one-on-one with the biggest names.
My guest is David Stern. He's the commissioner of the NBA.
It is always a pleasure, Brian.
Bill Hancock, he's the executive director of the Bull Championship Series.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban. Mark, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
My guest is Mickey Loomis. He's the executive vice president and general manager of the world champion New Orleans Saints.
Pleasure to be with you guys.
Mr. Allen, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
My guest is Mark Emmert. He's the president of the NCAA.
Oh, happy to join you. My pleasure.
My guest is Eric Spolstra. He's
the head coach of the Miami Heat.
Brian, appreciate it. Glad to be on the show.
Mr. Nicholas, it's an honor to have you on Sports Business Radio. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Brian.
Visit sportsbusinessradio.com
and subscribe to our free iTunes podcast.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and stay connected to the business side of sports only with Sports Business Radio. The website is sportsbusinessradio.com.
My guest is Matt Watson. He is the founder and CEO of Watson Creative. You can find them online at watsoncreative.com or on Twitter at watsoncreative. Matt and his team just designed and developed the new website for my Sports PR Summit event in New York City. See the incredible work they did at sportsprsummit.com. Matt, you told me our website would feel as premium as our event, and it certainly does. I thank you for that. Thanks for joining me on Sports Business Radio. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. It's a pleasure, and thank you again for the opportunity to work on your website and show you what we can do.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. We've gotten rave reviews. So again, I invite people to go to sportsprsummit.com and check that out. Let's talk about you. You spent 10 years working at Nike. You've got Watson Creative. For those of our listeners who aren't familiar with your company, tell us about you and your company.
Yeah, so I started off at actually out in New York at a firm called Lippincott. It's a large branding firm, and then I spent over 11 years at Nike working across the brand from .com to retail and brand design on athletes and initiatives, and spending time in footwear design. And then my last position was overseeing a lot of the .com and retail business at Nike. I opened up my own firm, never really thinking it would turn into what it has in 2 years. We're based out of Portland, Oregon. Our clients, about 25% of our business is professional teams. So we work with the Denver Broncos, the 49ers, the Boston Bruins, the Portland Timbers, the Seattle Sounders, so on and so forth. We have about 20 different teams that we work with. And then we have about 60 athletes that we also work with. That's about 10% of our business. And that's working with them across their own marketing propositions. It can be foundations. It can be getting them ready for opportunities. We just launched a site with Amon Green, and he is a huge fan of Batman. And actually, this has been one of the catalysts to help him actually be in the next Superman versus Batman movie. Another leg of our business is, of course, working with Nike. So we work across the portfolio in various ways, and the rest of our business is local business to Portland.
Let's go back to your work with the pro teams. You mentioned the Broncos, the 49ers, the Chiefs, the Dolphins, the Bruins, and others. They have their own website. So explain to our listeners where your work comes in and what you help them with.
Sure. So every league usually has their own templates that all the teams work from, and they're confining. They don't allow them to have their own brand expression and kind of a unique conversation with their fans. Every single team is different. So what we've created is partnering with Ski Data, who is a global company that primarily works with access to stadiums and stuff. And so it started off building out a system that really incentivized people to get to the games earlier. Anyway, what we do is basically everything that is outside of the NFL template, we're in charge of. So any fan experience that comes from the teams will come from us on various levels. But it's all built around incentives. And so we touch them from a social perspective, an on-ground perspective, all dealing with the primary motivation of loyalty towards our teams.
No, that's great stuff, and it's such a growing space. I'm sure you've seen that growth. It seems like that's what teams are really trying to focus on, is how do they develop those loyalty programs and just create better touch points with the fans who are coming to their games on a regular basis, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the challenge today is that, you know, TV is fantastic. Watching games at home is being seen more and more, and people are coming or not coming to games as much. Ticket sales are going down for some teams. Some teams don't have that problem; they have other issues. But that's one of the areas where this system can help incentivize people by providing them opportunities to gain points with the team and being able to redeem those points for experiences, things that they could not buy. So it could be getting down on the taking their son down onto the field at Mile High Stadium, going to the locker room, going to an early spring practice. Things that they can't buy are the items that drive the fans nuts and make them engage.
My guest is Matt Watson. He's the founder and CEO of Watson Creative. You can find them online at watsoncreative.com or on Twitter at Watson Creative. You mentioned athletes. I've worked with a lot of athletes, and yeah, the branding is so important and kind of showing their human and personal side. And I've seen some of the work you've done with Amon Green, former Green Bay Packer, all-time leading rusher for the Packers. He does a lot of work in the community. And as you mentioned, he's got this affinity for Batman, and you've kind of brought that to life with his new site. But I imagine it's a lot of fun working with some of these athletes to kind of zero in on what makes them special and unique via their website.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot of fun. I've always enjoyed working with athletes. You know, my days at Nike, I worked with over 50 athletes there. All the usual suspects that you assume, as well as some of my heroes as a kid. I got to work with Bo Jackson and bring him back into the Nike portfolio and do some campaigns around him, which was a huge opportunity and just probably one of the most memorable experiences I had. And then leaving and working with a variety of athletes. Another one would be Jason Duffner, working on his foundation and how his popularity can be leveraged to create awareness and to build towards causes that he cares about. So all of those it's an honor, it's unique business. I think the thing that makes us unique within this industry is the ability that we don't just do websites, we go over entire brands. I consistently have clients that come to me that believe that they need a large website, and we end up selling them on a very inexpensive collateral piece that will do the job tenfold. So we really pride ourselves on being agnostic to an exact set of tools that we use, but we really try to solve the problems for our clients across the board of marketing. So that can be product, that can be environments, retail environments, it can be obviously websites, branding, and traditional print.
So working for Nike for as long as you did, that's got to be an incredible experience. Like you said, you're working with some of the most elite athletes in the world, but you're also working around some pretty creative people. I'm sure that was a great learning experience for you that's helped you today, right?
Yeah, you know, I just kind of consider it grad school.
Yeah, it's pretty good grad school.
pretty good grad school. Yeah, it was just definitely an opportunity to learn. You know, you're surrounded around what I believe to be some of the best minds in the industry. I don't consider myself insanely special, but I consider the experience I've had pretty impressive, and they influence my work still to this day on a daily basis. I have ghosts in the back of my head of you know, former career directors I've worked with, you know, regional VPs, whatever it might be. It's been a great experience to see the world, but also see how sport is embraced across the world.
What do you do when you have a client who comes in and they don't quite understand what their brand is? They don't know what they want it to be. How do you work with them through that process to kind of zero in on here's what best represents your brand?
Yeah, so first of all, brand is not a logo. Brand is not a color. Brand is the way that people feel about your brand. And the best thing that you have is your warm handshake. Above and beyond that, you have a brand. And how you communicate that brand, the heart and soul, turning up, maybe it's a logo that really embraces who you are, maybe it's a pattern, maybe it's imagery and photography, how all that comes together to create emotion. You know, I always use the example of the Nike swoosh. The Nike swoosh is, you know, it's actually a very difficult logo to use. It's not perfectly centered and is kind of a pain. But it comes across beautiful because you've got really good designers that are leveraging it. But if you can imagine Nike Golf and the imagery that would be there, it'd be very pristine imagery of Tiger Woods. Pinstripes would be the patterns. It'd be calming. And then you'd have the swoosh there. And that creates an emotion that's vastly different than Nike basketball or Nike skate, where skate can be ripped up paper and imagery that's in your face and a completely different demographic. So branding is not a logo. Branding is really the emotion that comes from experiencing a brand. And so when we have a client that comes in that has branding issues, we really get basically the client up on a couch and we talk to them about who they are, what their position is, what their mission and vision are for the company or in life or whatever they're trying to do. And then we try to bring our experience to communicate that. And I think that's the secret sauce. You know, websites are a commodity these days. Telling your story is not.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think there's a lot of people that come in, they don't know what they want their brand to be. So the more you can help them. And then, you know, for us, the work you just did for the Sports PR Summit, we had some really good pictures and visuals. And our event is about people coming together and networking with other people and sharing expertise. And to be able to bring the images from our event to life via our website is a real asset for us. And you guys did that so well. It just looks phenomenal.
Well, you know, it made it easy. Not everyone has that beautiful of a background that you guys have. I mean, that space is gorgeous, and that contributes to making our job easier. But it also just captivates the feeling. It did a lot of work for us, and that's where, you know, we didn't have to rely on your brand as your logo as much, which looks great. But we didn't have to rely on it as much. We relied upon the photography there to tell the story, and that's. You know, 9 times out of 10, a client comes in and wants an amazing website. We first look at what's your budget for content. Content is king still. Really good photography, really good videos, really good written words. All of that has to add up. And I think that's something that is consistently lost with traditional web agencies that are most likely founded by guys that are tech.
Now, you guys are going to be launching a new video, a brand video on your own website, watsoncreative.com. Can you give us any kind of a sneak preview or hint of that so people go to your website and check it out?
Yeah, absolutely. It should be coming up later today, if not tomorrow, up on our site. And, you know, it's basically 2 years this last month since I left Nike. And so we just put a compilation together of the work that we've done and the team that we've built, and it's kind of a thank you to the people who've, you know, given us a chance to prove ourselves outside of the walls of Nike. I think that's one of the most difficult things about working at Nike is when you leave. It's such a beast, and such a you have so many resources there. The question comes: can you do something that's just as compelling without the Nike budget? And that's one of the things that I think that we really strove to do is to show people what we can do on limited budgets and limited resources. And I think that the quality of the work that we've done is every bit as good as the stuff that, you know, I've become accustomed to at Nike.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. Matt Watson, the founder and CEO of Watson Creative. You can find them online at watsoncreative.com. Go on to Twitter at Watson Creative. Matt, again, thank you for all of your help with the Sports PR Summit website. Continued success to you. And I look forward to collaborating on projects in the future.
Pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay in the know at sportsbusinessradio.com. Podcasts, blogs, and more powered by Postano. SBR will be right back.
My name is Sophia Berger. I want to tell you about the Pixie Project. The Pixie Project matches pets to the right people. The Pixie Project takes pride in finding matches for both people and animals. The Pixie Project also offers low-cost veterinary assistance. My family worked with the Pixie Project to adopt our lovable puppy, Scotty. He's a great addition to our family. So if you get a dog or cat, kitten or puppy, you should go to the Pixie Project. To learn more about the Pixie Project, visit them at www.pixieproject.org.
The website is sportsbusinessradio.com.
We are back, and a lot of thank yous on the show this week. Yogi Roth from the Pac-12 Networks. Again, go to lifeinawalk.com and contribute to his terrific project. Justin Garrity, the president of Postano. Find them online at postano.com. Amanda Bradford, the founder of the dating app, The League. Go to theleagueapp.co, theleagueapp.co. And Matt Watson from Watson Creative. Go to watsoncreative.com to find them. I want to thank our show staff, Brian Griggs, Josh Blank, and Doug Zanger. Thanks to our friends at Pestano for powering Sports Business Radio. Thanks to them for powering our Sports Business Radio Roadshow. Again, reminder, on December 4th, we'll be at UCLA in front of the students and faculty there for a conversation with former NBA star Baron Davis. Follow them on Twitter at Pestano. A podcast reminder, you can catch our show on demand every week. Just click on the iTunes icon on the front page of sportsbusinessradio.com to have our show podcast downloaded to your iTunes every week. You can also find us on Stitcher, TuneIn, and other apps. We'd really appreciate it if you post a review of our podcast on iTunes if you have the time. Follow me on Twitter at SB Radio. For Brian Griggs, I'm Brian Berger. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon right here on Sports Business Radio. Hi, it's Brian Berger. Here at Sports Business Radio, we are proud to work with our partners, Pestano. They make a sports-proven visual marketing platform that I've personally been amazed to see. Teams like the Dallas Cowboys, Boston Red Sox, LA Kings, and Cleveland Cavaliers all use Pestano to engage their fans. When sports teams and fans tell their stories together, amazing things can happen. Every fan has a story. Whether you want to put selfies on the Jumbotron, create a dynamic social media command center, or activate a hashtag campaign on your website, Pestano can design an amazing social experience true to your brand. Even better, using the Pestano platform can pay for itself through selling sponsorships. As an example, the Kings sell sponsor space to Toyota and other clients and run the ads using Pestano. Want to see what your team's social content could look like? Schedule a demo today. Go to Pestano.com/sports. If you're a fan of this podcast, you understand the real power of engaging your fans. And these guys get it. That is Pestano.com.